Hello and welcome to the Data Journalism Podcast. My name is Simon Rogers. I'm a data journalist, speaker and teacher and data editor at Google.
And my name is Alberto Cairo. I am a professor of visualization at the University of Miami, an infographics designer and journalist, and also a book author.
Now, this week we have a special edition. Alberto, do you want to tell us about our guest?
Sure. So our guest this week, and as you said, it's a very special edition of the podcast, as our guest is Anatoly Bondarenko, who is a head of data journalism at Texty. It's a news organization based in Ukraine that I have followed myself for many, many years after meeting Anatoly almost a decade ago in Kiev, Ukraine. Chatted with him, during the war, during the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
He is still in Ukraine and producing work, producing data journalism in addition to...
That's incredible.
Incredible. And really important pieces that I think are obviously having an impact.
The reason why we decided to do this sort of like rushed episode that is not as carefully edited that we say as other episodes that we have done is that we both thought that bringing some visibility to the work that Texty has done throughout the years in Ukraine, fighting against Russian misinformation, calling attention on government corruption in Ukraine for years, was really important at this point in time. They really deserve the attention that the little attention that we can bring to them these days. They really deserve it.
So let's get started.
Hi, my name is Anatoly Bondarenko. I'm a head of data journalism from texty.org.ua from Kyiv, Ukraine. Our team has produced tens of data journalism projects during last years.
We see the news about what's going on in Ukraine. Can you tell us a bit about what life is like for you there at the moment?
A really hard feeling. It's really hard to continue doing what you did before this time. So it's kind of very hard things psychologically, so to say. For example, first two days after war started, I never been hungry. I don't want to eat anything for the first couple of days. And psychological pressure is really big for all Ukrainians. It's really hard to concentrate on some kind of analytical or any task, any besides some very basic physical tasks, so to say, or exercises. It's not easy thing to continue your everyday function and so on. So it's really tough time for all, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you so much for making the time to speak to us today. Just full disclosure for the audience, Anatoly and I have known each other for years and we are friends. So some of the questions that I'm going to ask are, I already know the answers to, but I think that it's relevant for our audience to know a little bit about the amazing work that you and your team have produced throughout the years. So could you speak a little bit about what Texty is and where it comes from, where it originated, how it appeared, and a little bit perhaps about the work that you have done?
Me and Roman Kulchinsky, my colleague and friend, we founded Texty back in, 2010. And after we collaborated before this in other projects, one of the weekly magazines. We met in those projects, and after we leave that magazine, we decided to found something small, probably, but independent online media in Ukraine. It was start of Fourth Texty back in 2010. And I guess back in 2011, we started to pay attention to data journalism. It's probably connected with my educational background, because I'm engineer by education. And even before Texty, I tried to apply my knowledge about programming, my knowledge about data analysis, I tried to apply it on my previous work to process some big texts, to process big Excel sheets with the scripts and so on. So I have some experience back in, I guess, 28. And for text, we started to produce digital projects, I guess, in 2011, as I said. So it was a start. And then in 2012, we complete probably our first really important data application, data news application. It was a database of public procurements, first in Ukraine, because before that, we have an official site with data, but in text format, unformatted text, you can't find anything. You can link different entries for different firms, for different tenders. And we created first interface, first database of public procurements, which allowed anyone to work with some specific firm or some specific government institution. So it was our first application, and we made to five final stage of data journal, the journalist awards in 2012 with this project. We don't get first place, but I guess we were in final stage, so, nominated. I don't remember exactly. It's probably a second place or something like this.
You're definitely shortlisted, I remember.
Yeah, it was very encouraging for us. But of course, our main drive, our main inspiration was to find something interesting between piles of data, between different stuff. So it's of course main motivations, not only first place for data drone servers.
I remember meeting you in Kyiv years and years ago, and I think that I said explicitly to you, this is amazing, when you were showing me the stuff that you were producing. I was amazed at what you were able to do with such a small team.
I have to say it was a very lucky encounter for me to meet you in Kyiv. As I said, before 2015, we basically was a team of two or two and a half people, because one person was partially working half time for us for the site, and only after 2015 we started. We got our first office place, and we started to increase member of our data teams and member of our reporter teams. And before war, we got probably 7 members of in data team and approximately 7 members or 6 members in classical journalism teams,
and they are still working, right? I mean, is still producing work even during the war.
Yeah, we are trying to continue our work, but it's really hard because parts of our team now have to do other tasks. One member of our team, couple of members of our team was mobilized, and Part of our team in one was relocated to the western part, to different cities, but probably the main reason I mentioned this reason during at the start of my speech, it's really hard psychologically to concentrate on projects right now. It's really hard, especially I don't know about other people, but for me it's really really hard to concentrate, to start. I guess to be insider in this conflict and to try produce data journalism projects from inside of this conflict is really hard. So you have to be some kind in other place out of all this, because you got constant flow of news, very distressing, very shocking news about deaths of people, about elimination of whole of part of cities, about of all this human suffering. So it's really hard to concentrate of to be inside and to try to produce something, because you know data journalism is mainly slow journalism. You it's not quick reporting about events. So I guess newsrooms with accent of kind of real time reporting is more suitable for this time than newsrooms which try to produce slow journalism, slow data journalism. So I guess it's really hard to do something like we do before.
It's amazing to me that the team is still producing in this environment, and it puts a lot of things into perspective. Could you tell us a little bit about some of the work that the team has been able to do so far, and the kinds of things that are possible?
Yeah. We did two very specific projects before work started. One of them, it's a game how to differentiate between Russian and Ukrainian tanks. So it's an interactive game. And it's really useful game. It started as a half joke, but it's not joke anymore. And if you want to really know how to find some specific visual differences, you could differentiate between tanks, types of different tanks, and you could say probably this is Ukrainian tank or probably this is Russian tank. So it's interactive. And before that, we did a project about monitoring of Russian military places, Russian military bases. And we did it with the help of open data from Sentinel-1 sensor. It's a radar satellite. It doesn't depend on weather or time of the day. It sends a radio signal, got echo back, and obtain some information about, say, big chunks of metal on the ground, for example. And this big chunks of metal could be, for example, big collection of vehicles, military vehicles. And we found from the open sources, we found about 40 different bases and places and areas on near Ukrainian-Russian border with these places with kind of with Russian equipment, military. And we did an kind of interactive map. You could click on the spot, a specific spot, and to find timeline of images from satellite from Sentinel-1, and you could spot the difference, how many increased or decreased, how many equipment arrived or leave this specific place, and we started publishing this project at the start of this year, and we observed as the first stage amount of equipment increased almost everything or everywhere, almost everywhere. And before attack, we started to spot that amount of vehicles of military equipment Russians started to decrease because they leave those spots, they leave those areas, and they drive it to the border, near the border, on the border with Ukraine. So it's one of our latest projects.
So when you do a project like that, what kind of reaction do you get from people inside Ukraine who are, you know, looking at that? And does it help them to think, understand what's going on a bit better?
Very thankful for us for this project. They could discover for yourself, for themselves. What is currently happening on our borders? So it's kind of a revealing scene for many people from other countries.
I wonder if that's somehow empowering, you know, in a position where people don't have very much power, that suddenly they can see what's going on and understand it a bit better. Do you think that's fair to say?
At least for us, for our team, it's really, it was revealing. It was kind of revealing, it was one of the signals that, so to say, the attack was imminent. One of the signals before warning messages from USA government, for example.
Well, that's incredibly important.
It is important. And I think that what you're describing, the projects that you're describing, actually connect to projects that you produced prior to the war. So I remember, for example, that you use geospatial analysis before for previous projects. And some of your projects in the past, Textix projects in the past, related to government accountability, had big impacts in Ukrainian public opinion. Is that right? Can you talk a little bit about that, the impact of your work in Ukrainian society prior to the war, obviously?
Yeah, I think some of our projects got an impact. One of them is also interactive game we produced back in 2016. It's about public declarations of government servants. So basically, we presented to our readers some information from declarations, from tax reports. For example, type of model of car, amount of properties, size of land, which belongs to some public servant. And we proposed to our readers. Their task was to guess how big is salary for this servant, this public servant. It was really very unexpected results. For example, so you got for example very luxury car and many and big flat, but very small salary in many cases.
It's not the first time that I hear stories about similar to that from other countries, from other data generators that have produced similar work in other countries related to politicians.
And I was very amazed by the fact that probably about 100,000 persons played that game. It was really really like a hit, I guess it was very impactful. Another project that I should mention, a couple of projects about Russian propaganda. It was really impactful too, especially for journalists and for analytics, not only from Ukraine but for foreign analytics. This project that we got first place in the Sigma Awards, for this news application with very heavy use of machine learning and artificial intellect models, deep neural networks, to say specifically. We collect thousands of news items from many, so to say, junk media. And we filtered it, and we classified it by topics, and we classified it. How manipulative is this some specific kind? And we show the results on the interactive dashboard. So it was very impactful project, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the work that you have done around misinformation and propaganda is really interesting. And I can imagine right now that's also powerful. Do you think, is it something that's useful at the moment in helping to understand what's going on?
Yeah. The mechanic of Russian propaganda does not change. They just started to use it for slightly different topic, but methods and tricks basically the same, but much more intensive right now.
So when you're working as a journalist in this kind of environment, could you talk a little bit about whether it's possible to maintain any kind of objectivity about your work, or do you feel that that's just impossible at the moment?
Yeah, it's my personal opinion, but I guess it's impossible to maintain some kind of objectivity when you are insider in this situation. It's impossible. We try to use our standard methods of verification or of double checking some facts, some reporting, but in no case we will use some kind of opinion from another side of this conflict. What that I mean by objective, it's that objectivity is not possible for us right now.
So if there was one thing you wanted people to understand in the States or around the world about what's happening at the moment and your work, what would that be?
We studied Russian propaganda and Russian misinformation for many years, for at least from 2016. But for this current situation, for the last 2 weeks when war started, I have to say that I probably what I'd like to say is that before the war, you can find. Different mix of Russian messages. So it could be truthful, it could be false, pure false, it could be some kind of mix. But right now, for the past 2 weeks, it's pure false messages. So it's not truth at all. That's probably the main message from right now. So it's kind of pure fountain of lies. Especially from official speakers, official Russian speakers.
Anatoly, I think both of us really appreciate you being here with us on this call, and I can't imagine, like I said earlier, not being in that situation. So we're sending all of our good wishes to you and hopes for you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
All the best, Anatoly. Please stay safe. We're thinking about you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for your words.